Today, we're going to dig into what's called a carry trade. Doing so will hopefully show you why, in reality, the economy itself often departs from the economic theory that academics postulate. So let's start from the top. What's a carry trade? A carry trade is any kind of trade where you borrow cash at a lower interest rate to invest in an asset with a higher rate of return. Your bank is an institutional carry trader. It borrows money from its depositors, like you and me, at a low rate of interest and invests that money in loans with a higher prospective return. In the case of big retail banks, they borrow from our savings and checking accounts and lend out the money as mortgages. More broadly, carry is the entire basis of the financial system and the important credit it provides. It's an important concept to understand. What sorts of carry trades are there? Let's begin this deep dive with a simple example, the currency carry trade. A currency carry trade is when an investor borrows in one currency where the issuing country has a low interest rate, for example, the USA or Japan, then takes that money to make an investment in another currency where the issuing country has a high interest rate, such as Turkey, New Zealand, or Australia. That's a currency carry trade. So what's going on here? What's the logic of borrowing in one currency to invest in another? Let's break it down. Let's look at two countries, the USA and India. To make this simple, let's assume that inflation is 0% in both America and India. This means that the nominal rate of interest is equal to the real interest rate. Let's say you borrow $100 from Bank of America at a 1% annual interest rate, and you need to pay back the loan within 1 year. You now owe the bank $101 in 1 year. At an exchange rate of 1 to 10, you take this $100 and instantly buy 1,000 Indian rupees. You then instantly deposit your rupees at an Indian bank, where the annual interest rate is 10%. If you hold the deposit for 1 year, you have 1,100 rupees. If the exchange rate remained constant over the year between the dollar and the rupee, where $1 buys you 10 rupees, and is the exact same on day 365 as on day 1, you've made a 9% return on what you borrowed. You exchange your 1,100 rupees for $110, pay the bank the $101 you owe, and keep $9. Your return in relation to the initial dollar loan you took is 9%. Not bad. You'd be very pleased with this as an average rate of return in your investing lifetime. Economics, where lunch is never free, has formulated a law to address this type of transaction, covered interest parity. This states that arbitrage is not possible. That 9% interest rate differential will be exactly canceled out by a negative 9% difference between the spot, that's the exchange rate today, and the forward exchange rate. You can imagine why the arbitrage quickly would disappear. More people would borrow dollars and exchange into rupees, and the rupee would appreciate or depreciate due to this increased demand until the value of holding either currency reached an equilibrium. In other words, when covered interest parity holds, the annual interest rate differential of 9% between the dollar and the rupee won't earn you a profit, because the rupee would depreciate by 9% over that year. Now, does this hold in the real world? We find that covered interest parity generally holds, driven by two primary reasons. First, currency markets are highly liquid, and arbitrators exploit interest rate differentials when they do arise, and in so doing, affect FX rates. Back to our example, if lots of traders borrowed dollars to buy rupees, they'd have to buy those dollars back a year later to pay back their loans. This would lead to an appreciation in the dollar relative to the rupee. Second, a high nominal interest rate in an issuing currency is, in the long run, associated with a higher rate of inflation. High nominal interest rates simply reflect higher inflation, and therefore currency depreciation in the forward market, that is, the price of the currency in the future. The mechanics are pretty simple when expressed this way, but let's imagine it in a slightly more nuanced way. There are four underlying features of our seemingly simple example. 1. You're highly leveraged. You've borrowed $100 and staked no collateral. 2. You're investing in the highly liquid FX market. Liquidity describes how easy it is to buy or sell an asset. In fact, by participating in the dollar-rupee FX pair, you're doing your own small part to add to that liquidity of the rupee. 3. The exchange rate hasn't changed. And lastly, 4. You are, as a result of feature 3, short volatility. Features 3 and 4 need to be explained together because they're indispensable to the logic of any carry trade, where the carry trader makes money only when the interest rate differential exceeds the expected depreciation of the higher interest rate currency they buy. In the technical terms of financial economics, volatility describes the magnitude of price movements. Currency carry traders make money when FX volatility is low, and a lot of money when FX volatility approaches zero. Okay then, but doesn't covered interest parity essentially forbid a volatility low enough to allow currency carry traders to earn a profit? Yes, but economics isn't physics. In practice, the currency carry trade has been profitable for long stretches of time. By long, we mean several years. In periods of the 21st century, borrowing dollars to invest in Turkish assets is a good example. From 2002 to 2008, Turkish inflation was a cumulative 83%. U.S. inflation was a cumulative 20%. But the lira appreciated relative to the dollar by 35%. Turkish interest rates were higher than U.S. interest rates. Covered interest parity didn't hold. Suppose the rate of return on Turkish real estate is 20%. Many reasons could be behind this. A lack of housing supply, an expanding service sector that demands new office space, great weather that makes great resorts. Now suppose the average borrowing cost for Turkish construction firms to fund the construction of a house, office building, or resort is 18% through a Turkish bank. So, on average, a real estate project nets 2%. In the age of globalization, currency flows are relatively open. The Turkish firm could instead borrow in dollars for the same project for 5%. Now the net return, with no exchange rate fluctuation over the lifetime of the project, is 15%. The real economy firm is undertaking a carry trade, borrowing at a cheaper cost in dollars to fund a project with a higher return denominated in lira. Remember, when the Turkish firm borrows dollars, they convert them to lira, the home currency that they need to pay their workers, buy materials, and so on. This means that they're buying lira and selling dollars. If this is done on a large enough scale, the lira appreciates. If this is done over a long period of time because of a lot of optimism in Turkish real estate, or extending our example to the entire Turkish economy, the lira will continue to appreciate in nominal terms. The pure speculators, the currency carry traders, have seen this before. They recognize the appreciation in the lira relative to the dollar because large capital inflows to Turkey and they get in on the carry trade. Not only can they pick up the interest rate differential, in fact, they not only get a free lunch, but a free dessert. The lira is appreciating, not depreciating. Greed builds, and the lira continues to appreciate. Everyone's winning. Houses are being built. The Turkish economy is riding a boom from foreign capital inflows, and the providers of the capital are making money through the carry trade. But then, the financial crisis hits. Greed turns into fear. Everyone wants dollars and safe assets. Suddenly, the massive capital inflow to Turkey reverses, and the lira crashes. The early money did great, and the late money was wiped out. Covered interest parity has reasserted itself eventually. Indeed, the long run is a vague concept in economics. The currency carry trade worked for years, until it didn't. What are the consequences for a country's economy when there's a carry crash? we return to the four underlying features of the carry trade. 1. We return to the four underlying features of the carry trade. 1. High leverage. The Turkish that haven't paid back their large dollar debts now need to do so with a depreciating lira. They're likely to fail if they've taken lots of these loans. Corporate failures reverberate into employment and consumption. 2. Liquidity. When there's a rush to access the funding currency, liquidity evaporates. This is because assets are being sold en masse to access, in this case, the dollar. This type of crunch forces central banks to respond in clever ways to prevent a systematic collapse. 3. And lastly, 4. Volatility has returned. The small returns that could be made over a stretch of years relied on low volatility in exchange rates. The huge upsurge in volatility makes market participants shy away from carry trades to fund the real economy. In the case of Turkey, the credit that was provided from foreign markets contracts significantly. So we get to the final thrust of this deep dive. Carry trades are pervasive in the global economy. In fact, they're a highly significant form of credit creation. They're funded by low interest rate currencies, not only the dollar, but also the euro, the yen. They fund credit expansions where everyone seems to be winning, the country with the borrowers, as well as the speculators. Then a crisis comes, and the recipient currency, like the lira, crashes. This, in the first place, hurts the speculators, but more significantly, the country that attracted the inflows is hurt. A credit contraction reverberates into the real economy. There are many such examples throughout financial history. If you enjoyed the video, please let us know in the comments. We appreciate your feedback, as this helps us produce the future content that our viewers enjoy.